and a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also check out the show online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call, 910-251-6088. We'll have more from them coming up a little bit later on in the show this morning. Well, Hurricane Erin making its closest pass, towards North Carolina this morning. You can see in the satellite radar loop this morning, the North Carolina coast, specifically out in the Outer Banks, dealing with the brunt of the storm, or the brunt that is, in fact, impacting the United States. The update, this is out of the 5 a.m. advisory from the National Hurricane Center, now officially shows the storm moving east, north-northeast at 17 miles an hour. The pressure, 945 millibars, winds 105 miles an hour, as some rain bands from this storm were earlier impacting the Outer Banks. You can see on our radar product this morning some of the rain impacting the Outer Banks. Not anything too dramatic, but some heavily local, some heavy local showers and storms with that. Avon, one of the areas seeing some of those impacts right now, and we've got a live look at the Avon Pier courtesy of Surf Checks this morning. And as you can see in that video image, it looks like it may have frozen up there. We'll see if we can get that reloaded. It's a possibility the internet or power could have potentially gone down in that area as we look at the Avon area and look at some of the communities being impacted by that weather this morning, looking at some of those impacts across portions of North Carolina. Looks like our camera just came back here, so you can see the very rough surf out at the Avon Pier live this morning with some of those increased wave activities. High tide was about 30 minutes ago, so the surf is as high as it is going to be as this storm continues to impact the North Carolina coast. Some of those breaking waves could be as high as 15 to 20 feet. You can see some of them in that camera from Surf Checks right now, almost hitting the bottom of the Avon Pier this morning out in the Outer Banks. So that is what we are keeping an eye on as the storm does continue to move away. That is the good news to pass along this morning, moving away from the North Carolina coast. Here is the latest from the National Hurricane Center showing that track continuing its progress through portions of the Atlantic this morning, fortunately splitting the gap between the continental United States and Bermuda, not having any major impacts on land except for, again, some of that beach erosion, high surf. The rip current risk we've been talking about throughout the week continues to be pretty severe in a variety of areas due to the strength of Hurricane Erin, which is currently a Category 2 storm with those winds at 105 miles an hour. A state of emergency in effect for portions of, for the entire state of North Carolina this morning. I will note Governor Josh Stein making that announcement on Tuesday, a press conference yesterday talking about the impacts from the storm, getting things prepared. And it's unfortunately, no surprise here, we're in the peak of the Atlantic hurricane season. Late August, as we get into the middle and latter parts of September, we'll continue to see that risk. And the tropics, well, they are very active. Taking a look at the National Hurricane Center map this morning, you can see Erin churning off the east coast of the United States and two other areas that the National Hurricane Center is watching. This first one that does have a 60% chance of development in the next 7 days. That could be a wake-up call for the folks out in Bermuda, and then a wave just off the African coast with a 40% chance of development there. So we are in the peak of the season, and in the morning line email this morning put in there, you know, fortunately Erin's not having any major impacts across southeastern North Carolina. But as we continue through the rest of the Atlantic hurricane season, making sure that you are prepared, making sure that you've got everything that you need in place for what, you know, potentially could be some sort of additional tropical activity throughout the rest of this year is something that you definitely want to do. Looking at some of our local beaches this morning, things are for the most part relatively calm. Obviously, you do have the risk of some higher waves, and you can see down here, this is Wrightsville Beach, courtesy of WECT News. And as you can see there, there is not a whole lot of beach left with some of these higher waves. This is portions of Wrightsville Beach. Got some folks out there this morning catching some of these heavy and higher waves, but the beach erosion and the rip current risk does continue to be a major factor and will remain so through the end of this week. Aaron, fortunately for us here in North Carolina, not having a direct impact or an immediate landfall, I should say. Some impact, sure, but not expecting anything too crazy. So dodging a bullet, no question about it. With Aaron, we'll keep an eye on some of those cameras throughout the morning as we watch Aaron. It's making its closest pass as we are on the air right here on the Nick Craig Show. So we'll keep an eye on that throughout the rest of the program this morning. Taking a look at a very interesting story out from New York, from the New York Times yesterday. The headline is this: the Democrat Party faces a voter registration crisis. And, you know, this is a very interesting story that is out here from the New York Times, showing the Democrat Party struggling with a registration crisis. And to me, that's not a surprise. To me, this is not something that I find to be unbelievable, right? We've talked about over the last couple of months how the Democrat Party is continuing to struggle with voters, how the Democrat Party across the board is struggling to message its ideas in a sufficient way to win over the support, win over the trust of the American voter. And I'm going to read a little bit directly from the article here this morning because I think it's incredibly relevant. Again, this is a New York Times piece. So this is not right-wing media. The authors of this piece are not friends of those on the Republican side of the political aisle. However, the story reads as follows. The Democrat Party is hemorrhaging voters long before they even go to the polls. Of 30 states, which does, by the way, include North Carolina, that track voter registration by political party, Democrats lost ground to Republicans in every single one between the 2020 and 2024 elections, and often by a lot. That four-year swing towards the Republicans add up to 4.5 million voters, a deep political hole that could take years for the Democrats to climb out of. And there are a couple of different images here this morning. The first one we'll look at, this is a Democrat Party registration loss. I'll pull down this Avon Pier graphic. We'll check back on that in a little bit. But this is showing all of the states, and the line associated with the arrow indicates how much, in terms of a percentage, the voter registration dropped. But in all 30 states that track party affiliation, like the state of North Carolina, Democrats have continued to lose voters. Again, not a surprise to me. I would probably say not a surprise to many of you if you look at this situation that is continuing to unfold. So this is what the Democrat chart looks like. We then flip over to the GOP chart, and you can see in many of these states, big time increases for the Republican Party. You're looking at states like Idaho, which had the largest single gain of any state in the United States. You look at states like Florida as well, Louisiana seeing some increases there, even in the great Northeast. You're looking at states like New York, like Connecticut, Maine, even a little increase there as well as Connecticut is as well on that list of states that are seeing increase in Republican voter registration. Now, there's a very interesting point coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. If the Democrats win the midterms after articles like this, that's very frustrating. And so there's a couple of different ways to take an article like this, and I'm going to read through a little bit more of it. as we continue this morning. But one thing I will note, and this is something that I think is important to understand in the process of watching elections unfold, you know, municipals this year, at least across North Carolina, the highly anticipated midterm elections next year here in North Carolina. As you see individuals leave the Democrat Party, at least in North Carolina, many of them are registering as unaffiliated. They are not necessarily moving to the Republican Party. Some are, and Republican voter registrations do continue to be up. There's no question about that at all. Republican voter registrations continue to trend and tick upwards. That has been the case for the last couple of years. The issue I think you have is in other states where the voter registration and of parties do not allow individuals to register as an unaffiliated or an independent or a third party voter. Many of them are, yes, frustrated with the Democrat Party. So they are, in fact, well, leaving the Democrat Party, at least directly from a registration standpoint. But that does not inherently mean, at least to me, that those individuals are now hardcore Republican partisans. And when I say that somebody is a partisan, it's not meant in a derogatory phrase or a derogatory term at all. It is a label used to describe individuals that vote with their party. If you are somebody that shows up as a registered Republican for an election and votes straight Republican ticket, you are by definition a partisan within the Republican Party. You are voting for all Republican candidates. But you do have to also look at, and we see this specifically when you look at our recent gubernatorial elections here in North Carolina, even individuals that are registered Republican or registered Democrat, they still vote for candidates that are on the opposite side of the political aisle, right? It's the reason that somebody like Donald Trump has continued to be successful here in North Carolina and has won three times in a row. He's not just winning Republican votes. There are registered Democrats, plenty of them, that are voting for Donald Trump because those individuals are not strictly partisan voters. North Carolina is a unique animal in the fact that we do allow individuals to be registered as unaffiliated. Those individuals are, in fact, allowed to vote in either party primary, not both, but either. They can choose on primary day to vote in the Republican or the Democrat primary. So they've got the ability to make those decisions. They've got the ability to play essentially in both political parties, and that's why you see unaffiliated growing in this state faster than anything else. And it makes, to me, perfect sense. If there's no reason to be a registered Republican or Democrat, then you can absolutely register as an unaffiliated. Even if you're a Republican, grab a GOP ballot during the primary and, of course, vote for those candidates. And, of course, come general election, every voter gets the same ballot, regardless of whether you're a Republican, Democrat, or an unaffiliated voter. You're getting the same general election ballot with all of the candidates from all the various political parties on it. And so the question really that needs to be asked is, are the individuals that are evacuating the Democrat Party, and it makes a lot of sense why they are those individuals now partisan Republican voters? Or are they the term that I have coined and been using over the last couple of years? Are they a ping pong voter? And what I mean by that is, as they go down the ballot, and you look at an election like last year, where you have the entirety of the Council of State on the ballot, president, Congress, the North Carolina General Assembly, individuals that are that I've described and see as ping pong voters vote for some Republicans and some Democrats. Maybe they vote for more Republicans than Democrats, but they're bouncing back and forth between both parties. Registration does not inherently indicate how somebody is going to vote. Are voters frustrated with the Democrat Party? Yes. We have seen in survey after survey, poll after poll, that Democrat voters themselves are frustrated with their own party. Is that forcing them out? I don't think so. Partisan Democrats are not going to leave the Democrat Party the same way that partisan Republicans are not going to leave the GOP. So you ignore those two categories on either side, and then you get into the more middle-of-the-road Democrats. Are those individuals leaving the party? I think yes. And I think the evidence provided here in this analysis by the New York Times and a company called L2 that compiled the data and went through this process, those are showing that, yes, it is likely these weaker partisan Democrats that are leaving the party. And just because they're leaving does not mean that these people are never going to vote for Democrats again. It means they're no longer a registered Democrat, sure. It does not necessarily mean that they are a hardcore Republican. So let's go through some more details in the article. The stampede away from the Democrat Party is occurring in battleground states, the bluest states and red states as well, according to the analysis of voter registration data by the New York Times. The analysis used voter registration data compiled by L2, a nonpartisan data firm. Few measures reflect the luster of a political party's brand more clearly than the choice by voters to identify with it, whether they register on a clipboard in a supermarket parking lot, at the Department of Motor Vehicles, or in the comfort of their own homes. And fewer Americans are choosing to be Democrats. In fact, for the first time since 2018, more new voters nationwide chose to be associated with the Republicans than the Democrats in 2024. All told, Democrats lost about 2.1 million registered voters between 2020 and the 2024 elections in all 30 states in which data was tracked, along with Washington, D.C., which also allows people to register with a political party. There are still more Democrats registered nationwide than Republicans, partially because of big blue states like California and New York that have a large, obviously, sample of those Democrat voters. Democrats went from a nearly an 11-point edge over Republicans on Election Day in 2020 in those places with partisan registration to just over 6 percentage points in 2024. That's a significant drop. I mean, you're talking about essentially losing half of their advantage. Yes, I know 11 to 6 is not half, but it's pretty damn close for all intents and purposes. So that 11-point edge cut in half, not over 20 years, not over 30 or 40 years, all of this in the span of four short years, 2020 to 2024. Now, the New York Times says this, and I don't necessarily agree with it. They say that swing helps to explain President Trump's success last year, where he won the popular vote for the first time, sweeping the swing states and roaring back into the White House. Michael Prusser, who tracks voter registration data closely and is the director of data sciences for Decision Desk HQ, which is a phenomenal resource and website I'll note, says, quote, "I don't want to say the death cycle of the Democrat Party, but there seems to be no end to this. There is no silver lining or cavalry coming across the hill. This is month after month, year after year." The shifts also preview Democrat weakness in 2024. The party saw some of its steepest declines in registration amongst men and young voters, according to the New York Times analysis, two groups that swung sharply towards Donald Trump. Now, diving in on that, to me, that makes perfect sense. And we saw in a variety of various groups that they were leaving the Democrat Party and voting for Trump and the Republicans. Yes, men, younger voters. We also saw some of the similar data with Hispanic voters, black voters. I mean, it was all across the board. Democrats were hemorrhaging votes from various groups that make up a voting block, right? When you look at the demographics of a voter, it's broken up into a plethora of different things, you know, race, religion, sex, income. There's a thousand different metrics that can be used to break down voters, and it's relevant data. The campaigns use it, political parties use it to target messaging, to try and reach out to individuals that might have some sort of political agreement or alignment with them. Makes perfect sense. And we saw in the 2024 election exactly that taking place. large portions of some of these subset groups were evacuating the Democrat Party, leaving Democrat voter, Democrat candidates behind and saying, I'm voting for Republicans. All four presidential battleground states covered by the New York Times analysis, Arizona, Nevada, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania, showed significant Democrat erosion. In North Carolina, Republicans erased roughly 95% of the registration advantage that Democrats held in the fall of 2020, according to state records as of this summer. In Nevada, Democrats suffered the steepest percentage point plunge of any state but West Virginia between 2020 and 2024. The share of voters choosing to register with either party went down after the state adopted an automatic voter registration system, but the Democrat decline allowed Republicans to briefly surpass Democrats earlier this year. For many years, more and more voters have been registering as independent or unaffiliated, snapping both parties' roles. More recently, however, that growth has come mostly at the expense of Democrats. And I'm glad that the New York Times put this in their article, because that was the key point that I was just making earlier. People leaving the Democrat Party as a whole, saying I am no longer a registered Democrat, does not equate to Republicans doing better in general elections or any election for that matter of fact. It doesn't. Now, does it give and does it open the door potentially for not the Republican Party, but for Republican candidates? I think the answer to that question is yes. And let me be clear, there is a big difference between the so-called Republican Party and the GOP and candidates that are registered as Republicans, right? A political party is this kind of strange thing that kind of sits in the corner of the room. Yes, it's resourceful. Yes, it's got a huge benefit, but it's not inherently something that people get behind. What they do, in fact, get behind are candidates. Case in point, Donald Trump. Right. They love Donald Trump. They support Donald Trump. He happens to be a Republican. He happens to be portraying and pushing many Republican-led beliefs and ideals, sure. But it's not the party that is drawing them to vote for Trump. It is Trump that is drawing them to vote for the party. And that is an important distinction that I think that needs to be laid out when these discussions are taking place. Personalities matter. Candidates matter. Parties, yes, they're important, but people are not necessarily, and people are not inherently voting for somebody because, oh, they have an R next to their name. Yes, hardcore partisans are, absolutely. But it's why candidate strength is such an important conversation. It's why it's so pivotal to during the primary process, which will have take place next year in the state of North Carolina coming up in early March. We're going to have a primary for the midterm elections. You'll have a Senate primary. You'll have primaries for the General Assembly, other elections that are taking place next year here locally, a county commission and school board, some potential primaries in those races. Too early to say for certain right now. Nothing is guaranteed with that. But all of that will take place, and it's why I continue to stress the importance of primaries. Winning a primary and getting clobbered in the general election doesn't matter. You have to be a strong enough candidate to, yes, win in the primary and then translate and transition that into beating a Democrat in the general election, right? I hate to bring this up, and some of you will probably be ticked off with what's about to come out of my mouth, but Mark Robinson, ladies and gentlemen, is the greatest freaking example of that issue. The strongest candidate in the primary mopped the floor with the other GOP candidates. He was not the candidate that was set up and best portrayed to go forth in a general election against Josh Stein. Don't take my word for it. Go look at the election results. Mark Robinson got freaking annihilated by Josh Stein. There was no fraud. It wasn't the GOP's fault. It's that Mark Robinson, it was a crappy general election candidate. Plain and simple. You don't have to like it. You can think I'm full of it. You can think I'm part of the problem. I'm the establishment. Whatever you want to say, go look at the data. Go look at the election results. Go look at how many Republicans did not vote for Mark Robinson in the general election. A state that Donald Trump won handedly. A Republican governor had the worst gubernatorial loss in 45 years in North Carolina. That does not happen by accident. That did not happen because of voter fraud. That did not happen because of this mass conspiracy with the Republican Party. It happened because Robinson is a crappy candidate. I'm sorry to say it, but it's the God's honest truth. And if Republicans are unwilling to wake up to the fact and wake up to the idea that you need to settle these during the primary and make sure that the best candidate gets and goes forward, wins in the primary, and then moves on to the general, the same thing will happen, regardless of what the voter registration data looks like, regardless of whether Republicans are outpacing Democrats in registration. It doesn't matter. It's the candidate and it's the personality that matters. That's why Donald Trump is so popular. Because it's not about the GOP. It's not about the RNC. It's not about having the elephant next to your name. That's not what's relevant. It's the personality of Donald Trump. That's what people like. They support the MAGA agenda. They support the MAGA narrative. It's not the GOP that's doing it. And so I'll hop off my soapbox here and get back to this article. But that's why it's so pivotally important for people to be involved in the primary, because that's really where the decision is made. And when you have weak candidates in the primary, or you have a weak candidate make it through the primary, I should say, the end result is one that unfortunately we saw unfold last year in North Carolina, where Mark Robinson got destroyed by Josh Stein in a state that Donald Trump handedly won. It's not voter fraud. It's not a scam. It's not the Republican Party in North Carolina, the NCGOP, rigging the books against Mark Robinson. He was a bad candidate, had way too much dirt, way too much garbage in his past, and it not only affected his race, but there's no question about it, it had an impact on down-ballot races, for example, the attorney general race, the lieutenant governor race, and other council of state seats here in North Carolina. It's not just, oh, well, one bad candidate. No, absolutely not. When you've got a sinking ship, it affects other things when all their names are on the ballot. And when Democrats and can use some of those ridiculous comments made by somebody like Mark Robinson and tie that to people like Dan Bishop, which is exactly what they did. And I would say no guarantees. I can't predict this to be 100% true, but it could have very well been a reason why Democrat Jeff Jackson is currently our attorney general and Dan Bishop is not. Back to the New York Times article, top Democrat strategists say that the party's nationwide registration decline is hidden in a plain sight crisis that must be reversed before the 2028 election. The New York Times writes this. Consider this. In 2018, Democrats accounted for 34% of new voter registrations nationwide, while Republicans were only 20%. Yet by 2024, Republicans had overtaken Democrats among new registrants. In 6 years, the GOP share rose by 9 percentage points, while the Democrat share dropped nearly 8 points. And it shows the share, this article over at the New York Times shows the share of voter registration. And you can see that trend ticking up in the middle parts of 2023 through 2024 and continuing through the entirety of last year and obviously now into the early parts of 2025 when most of this data was compiled and made available. The New York Times compiled registration data from L2, the data analysis company they worked with, and compared it to state records across the country to show the scope of registration decline for Democrats and interviewed more than 24 party strategists and officials involved in registration efforts. According to Maria Cardona, a veteran party strategist and lifelong member of the Democrat National Committee, said, quote, "We fell asleep at the switch, but Democrats are divided and flummoxed over what to do. For years, the left has relied on a spiraling network of nonprofits which solicit donations from people whose identities they need not to disclose to register Black, Latino, and younger voters. Though the groups are technically nonpartisan, again, technically nonpartisan, the underlying assumption has been that most new voters' registrations would be Democrat. Donald Trump upended that calculation with the inroads he made with working class non-white voters. Going back to Maria Cardona, she said, quote, "You can't just register a young Latino or young black voter and assume that they're going to know that the Democrats have the best policies for them." Well, you can't assume that, and it's arguably not true. So that might add into it as well. Behind the scenes, a fierce fight is underway over how Democrats should address their sagging voter registration numbers and which groups should receive funding to do the work. It's a battle with hundreds of millions of dollars at stakes, pitting partisans against philanthropists and some of the Democrat Party's most important constituents against one another. Voter registration is an important barometer of a state's political tilt, even if it doesn't necessarily predict the outcome of the next election. Experts sometimes call it a lagging indicator because people typically stop voting with a party years before they formally register with a new one. That's a pretty interesting analysis there from the New York Times. Kentucky and West Virginia, for example, each flipped to a Republican registration advantage only in recent years, but both states turned red in presidential contests a long time ago. And I guess that makes sense, right? The process to change your voter registration, while it's not complicated, unless you're somebody that is hell-bent on voting in a party primary, which, as we're well aware, most people do not vote in primaries. Turnout in primaries are incredibly low. That is, I would argue, a big-time issue that is being dealt with and is something that is a big-time struggle, I think, for both political parties. And so there's really no surprise there that people just don't go through the process of changing their registration. They have to maybe go to the DMV. Maybe they've got to try and find some login on a website to change it. No real reason for them to do that if they're not going to, you know, immediately start playing in partisan politics. So I think that's some pretty insightful analysis there from the New York Times. Tom Beiner, one of the Democrat Party's leading experts on voter registration trends, spent much of 2024 downplaying the seriousness of his party's registration woes. He has now come around saying, quote, "I was wrong." Clearly, in retrospect, we can say that the Democrat Party had dug itself in too deep of a hole in the preceding 4 years for the Harris campaign to dig itself out of in just a few months. Tom told the New York Times, it was a big flashing red alert. And it goes to a bigger issue that I think the Democrat Party continues to struggle with right now. And it really can only be described as complete and total ignorance. And in some cases, complete and total denial of what's going on. I've talked about in the past some of these 80-20 political issues that the Democrats are completely striking and missing on. You talk about men and women's sports, for an example. We'll just use that. I could list off a dozen things, but let's just use one for an example. Men and women's sports. This was a big ticket item for the Democrat Party not that long ago. I mean, even almost in the last election cycle. This was something that there was a political divide between the left and the right. You had Republicans out there saying, 11-year-old girls should be protected and not have to deal with biological men, dudes, participating in their sports and going in their locker rooms. That's not a crazy radical idea. That's not something that is a far fringe idea by one party or the other. 80% of people agree that that makes a whole hell of a lot of sense. There's no reason that an 11-year-old girl should be in the same locker room with an 11-year-old boy who's pretending to be a woman because his parents told him, oh, it's okay to decide that your gender or your sex is different. It's absurd. It's an 80-20 political issue that the Democrats are absolutely on the wrong side of. And it's things like that, and there's a variety of these issues that have continued to persist for the Democrat Party that are leading up to the mess and the chaos that they're in right now. It's all self-inflicted. It's all their own fault. And it seems like maybe some, not all, but some Democrats are finally starting to wake up to the reality that you can't be on the wrong side of all of these issues. Coming up in a little bit, we'll talk to Seth Woodall. He's an attorney here in North Carolina. We'll talk about crime in these major Democrat cities. That's another shining example of where Democrats are just dead wrong from a policy perspective. Nobody, regardless of their political affiliation, regardless of their gender, their race, their sex, their income, nobody wants their community to be unsafe and dangerous. Nobody. There's not a single person that says, raises their hand and says, I want my city, I want my town, I want my neighborhood to be unsafe. Nobody wants that. Literally nobody. Yet Democrats with their policies and their ideas are making large portions of major metropolitan cities completely unsafe and putting them in a completely unsustainable path moving forward. Another 80-20 issue that the Democrats are on the wrong side of. And for the longest time, including Tom Bonnier, who is a Democrat Party voter registration expert, people like him buried their head in the sand, plugged their ears, and just hoped that it wouldn't be a problem. Just hoped that the problem would miraculously resolve itself and it wouldn't come back and bite the Democrats in the ass. But as we have seen, as we saw unfold in November of last year, it does in fact have a massive and a major impact. You don't have to be a political science professor to wrap your head around the impact that it has. It's a very real thing that the Democrat Party is dealing with right now. Last summer, Bucks County, a competitive Philadelphia suburb, tilted Republican in registration for the first time since 2007, according to state records. In the fall, Donald Trump became the first Republican presidential candidate to carry this county in this century. Doesn't happen by accident. It's not just capturing lightning in a bottle. It's a clear trend away from Democrats in the Democrat Party because their ideas suck. This spring, it was Miami-Dade County in Florida where the number of active Republican voters in the country zoomed past Democrats just months after Donald Trump became the first Republican presidential candidate to carry that county in decades. As recently as November of 2020, Democrats outnumbered Republicans there by over 200,000 voters. 4 years ago. Statewide, a 1.2 million voter swing flip in Florida has taken place, according to the analysis. North Carolina could be the next battleground state to tip. State records show that Democrats' edge in the state is down to less than 17,000 voters from nearly 400,000 4 years ago. And there is a very interesting chart that is, or a website that is available over at the over at a website called CarolinaElections.com. This is a product of the John Locke Foundation, and it shows this voter registration. I want to pull this chart up for you. You can see right now that Democrats are just barely ahead of Republicans in terms of registration. Just barely. And I think this is updated as of last week. So this is some pretty new, pretty relevant data that is available. And when you look at the difference there, you're looking at less than 16,000, about 15,500 vote difference, registered difference between Democrats and Republicans. But I'll point you to the other huge number on this list, unaffiliated voters who currently have the largest share of voters in the state. 2.9 million individuals registered as unaffiliated, compared to 2.3 registered as Democrats and 2.2 million registered as Republicans. So as you look at this data, yes, the Democrat Party has lost almost 500,000 votes over the last 4 years. Voters, I should say, people registered with their party, but a lot of those people have gone unaffiliated. And just because they are going unaffiliated does not mean that they're not going to vote for Democrats in the future. And the only reason I lay that out, I'm not trying to throw water on this and try and tamp this whole thing down and make it out as if it's not a big deal, because it is. It's a massive deal when a party loses 400 plus thousand voters. Absolutely no question about it. But just because people are leaving the Democrat Party and registering unaffiliated does not mean that they're Republican voters. It does not mean that they're going to vote for maybe even a single Republican in an election. They still might be a tried and true liberal. They're just disenfranchised from the Democrat Party. It does not inherently make them a Republican voter. So a very interesting article over at the New York Times. There's some other details that we can hopefully get into later on in the week, maybe tomorrow or early next week, particularly looking at the struggles of the Democrat Party amongst men, younger voters, Latinos, and the African-American community as well, which the Democrats have completely lost vast swaths of some of those voting blocks. We'll continue to follow this trend as we head through the rest of this year. Primaries early next year, and of course, all eyes across the country are going to be on midterm elections as we head into 2026, and some big-time elections, for example, our Senate race here in the state of North Carolina. We'll keep you up to date with all those details right here on the Nick Craig Show. As we continue to roll on this morning, I do want to tell you about the law group here in Wilmington. When legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the law group. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across the eastern half of our state. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. Great news, folks. They're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate the Law Group and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. As we roll on and continue our Thursday morning broadcast, we'll take a look at what's going on with Hurricane Aaron. Plus, we'll talk to Seth Woodall about crime in Democrat cities and some of the issues that that proposes as the Nick Craig Show rolls on, streaming live this morning, 7 a.m. on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for continuing with us as we continue to track Hurricane Aaron this morning. Still a Category 2 hurricane, now moving away from the east coast of the United States, north-northeast at 17 miles an hour. Those winds are at now 105 miles an hour, so that would be described as a lower-end Category 2 storm. We should be getting a new advisory from the National Hurricane Center coming up here in just a little bit, around 8 o'clock. So as we get those details in, we'll pass them along to you. Taking a live look this morning out at some of our beaches, here is the Avon Pier, courtesy of Surf Checks. This is in the Outer Banks, showing the increased surf, some of those high-breaking waves making their impacts across the Outer Banks, where there is a tropical storm warning in effect for some of the impacts from that storm. Looking at a radar this morning as well, some of those tropical bands do continue to impact the area, but I'll be the first to admit, really not all that much. Those tropical waves or tropical winds and rains are staying mostly offshore as it stands right now. It's definitely some gusty winds in the area. You can see that on the Avon Skycam here from Surf Checks this morning. Dodging a major bullet here in North Carolina, no question about it. However, the Atlantic is still brewing, still primed for some additional storms throughout the rest of the Atlantic hurricane season, which I'll note runs for a couple of more months. Stay out of the ocean, rip current risks all up and down the eastern seaboard do continue to remain at incredibly elevated levels throughout the rest of the week. Wrightsville Beach putting in a no swim advisory earlier this week, and that lasts all the way until Friday. So fortunately, Aaron now moving away. Great news here for the state of North Carolina and the North Carolina coast. You're listening to the Nick Craig Show. it's nothing new that in major Democrat cities across the United States, crime runs rampant. Over the last couple of weeks, we've seen President Donald Trump and his attempt to clean up Washington, D.C. To talk more, a little bit more about that this morning and some of the impacts here across the state of North Carolina, Seth Woodall joins us this morning on the Nick Craig Show. Seth, it's no surprise that in areas where you're soft on crime and allow repeat offenders out of prison consistently, crime rates skyrocket. It becomes an unsafe place to live, work, or play. Assess this whole situation, this growing trend over the last couple of years to allow criminals to continue to repeat crime over and over again.
Well, what you're seeing up in Washington, D.C., nobody should be surprised that it has gotten to this point. So over the last several years, Democratic leaders up in that area, from the mayor on down, have just allowed and really created policies that allowed criminals to continue to run rampant. And so it's gotten to the point where many families in the United States don't even want to visit Washington, D.C. anymore. It used to be really a location that you wanted to take your children to and show them the Capitol. And there's so many great things that have happened there. And it should be just the center point of our nation, but it is not. And that is because the policies of the left have just left it crime ridden. And it's terrible to say. So I'm glad to see that Donald Trump has taken the initiative to try to correct that. Because again, families don't feel safe. And he did that because last week, somebody was attacked and in the government position. And, we just had enough. He's had enough. And so he's taken over the Metropolitan Police up there. He's got National Guard in, and the federal law allows the president to take control of the Washington, D.C. National Guard. So we have National Guard troops on the ground. We see that at least five Republican governors across this nation have committed to sending their own National Guard troops in to D.C. to assist. So I think Trump has really stepped up, and the Republican Party is behind him. Now, his right to do that only lasts for 30 days. Then it's going to take a joint resolution of Congress and Senate to extend that. And Trump had said last week that he, in fact, plans on seeking an extension and possibly even a long-term extension. And I think it's needed in D.C. I think, the left certainly do not want that, but it's I think the average person, this should be a nonpartisan issue all the way around. We should want safe streets in every community. And that's what Trump's starting to establish, starting right there in Washington, D.C.
The weak policies from elected officials, city council and county commissions across the United States in these heavily Democrat areas, no question, have caused some of this. But Seth, turning to the legal side, there's also an issue with left-wing district attorneys where there are laws on the books that say if you do a variety of things, it's illegal, it's a crime, we're going to enforce it. Yet some of these left-wing DAs allow repeat offenders to continue to commit the same crime over and over again. A little slap on the wrist, you're back out in the streets. Talk about that impact.
So district attorneys are typically elected across the nation. And so the district attorneys in these various regions can pass their own policies. So just like in North Carolina, there's 100 states and typically our counties, typically each county has its own elected DA. Some of the more rural communities like Rockingham and Caswell County, we have a combined judicial district with one district attorney that is elected. But those elected district attorneys can pass their own policies as to what they think is important for the communities. And what you're seeing, just like in Washington, D.C., is these left-wing district attorneys are just going soft on crime. They're passing bond policies where they're not seeking high bonds or in some cases, not even any bond for violent criminals. And if they are charged, the district attorneys can come in and reduce the charge. They can dismiss the charge, and they have total prerogative. They are acting at the will of the citizens who elect them and have no oversight otherwise. And so they're doing as they please. And this has to do with partisan politics, but it's driving up the crime rate. And it is a major, major issue. And we need to be mindful as citizens of this great nation that we need to elect conservative leaders, especially in these judicial positions, that will ensure that crime is a paramount concern for the safety of the communities. So what you're seeing in these leftist districts is really sad, considering that we are the United States of America.
Obviously, we're talking about Washington, D.C. this morning. Other areas, New York City, the mess going on up there with that mayoral race is getting some national attention. But turning the focus back to North Carolina this morning, Seth, there are issues here in this state as well in some of these Democrat hotbeds. You look at the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area, you look up in Raleigh, out to the west in Asheville, and even in the eastern half of the state as well in some municipalities. These things are starting to creep into North Carolina. To me, that should be a major concern for every citizen across this state.
It is a red flag, and I think we need to be mindful of that, and I think we need to start watching for that. And just like I said, we need to make sure that the leaders that we're electing actually have the best interests of the public in mind when they run for these seats. But we are seeing in Durham County, in Wake County, Mecklenburg County, up in Buncombe County, there are just some extreme left-wing leaders that are being elected into positions. And quite frankly, they have some of the wildest ideas as to what they think our public policy needs to be. And we need to be mindful of that and watch, because you're going to continue to see increasing crime and just a cultural decay that we've seen over the last several years. And in my opinion, it is from the left-wing policies that have been pushed on us as conservatives. And it's time to step up, fight back, and make sure that we get involved in local politics down from, you know, municipal level to the state level, to ensure that we get the right leaders in place.
Yeah, a lot of municipal elections coming up later on this year. Voter turnout in those, unfortunately, tends to be historically low. Folks are just not engaged in what's going on in their local government. As we look at the national trend, obviously, President Donald Trump and the Republicans had a pretty good night back in late November or early November of last year. Do you think that the tide is maybe starting to change on this? Before I get your answer on that, I mean, you look at the defund police movement. It was a real hot topic for a couple of years. It's, of course, backed off now because even those on the political left have realized it's a terrible idea. Do you think we're starting to see a similar situation ongoing with this lawlessness and this out-of-control crime? Are people just have had enough of it? They're fed up?
I think so. If you going back to the defund the police movement, that the entire movement, the policies behind that, the thought process just fly in the face of reason and common sense. Why anybody would not want our communities safer just really blows my mind. But that was a huge push from the left, and it worked for a period of time. But what has happened, and again, this should be a nonpartisan issue, but in fact, it is a partisan issue. What has happened is we have seen as a nation, as small communities, that when you allow these left-wing radical policies to be implemented, it creates just havoc in the streets. It creates a slippery slope for children. You don't want your kids to go out. You're scared for your family to be out. And I think we've seen in November that the nation's majority has had enough. And they stepped up. They voted for Donald Trump because they like the fact that he's willing to stand up and fight for America first. And that's what his agenda is all about. And I think we need to take that all the way down to the state level.
Well, and you look at North Carolina as a state, and obviously you can look at New York and California. Those states are on decline. People are evacuating those states at record numbers. We see those studies come out from U-Haul and other moving companies every year. But we look at North Carolina, it's been the number one state for business three or four times over the last handful of years. This state is on the rise, Seth, and I'm genuinely concerned that if, especially as these larger metropolitan areas continue to grow and these out-of-control Democrat policies creep out of these urban centers, that it could not only have an impact on the security and safety, but really hamstring the state of North Carolina going forward, where everything seems to be moving in the right direction right now.
Oh, I think you're exactly right. So I think we've been the number one business state in the nation by U.S. News the last 3 out of 4 years, if I'm correct. And so we have a tremendous economic boom here in the state of North Carolina. But if you look at the demographics and you look at the statistics around voter rolls, Wake County, especially in the Charlotte area, I mean, they just have conglomerates of Democrat leftists. And I'm talking about hundreds of thousands of voters that are coming into this this state and quite frankly have the ability to change public policy. And it is frightening. We need to be mindful of that. But there are some just major centers in the metropolitan area around Raleigh, Charlotte, and some of the bigger cities that, you know, they're as blue can get if you look at the voting maps. So we need to be mindful of that.
It's a great conversation this morning, Seth. Thanks for joining me on the Nick Craig Show.
Thanks, Nick.
Great to always catch up with Seth Woodall. Some great insight there on, again, another 80-20 Democrat issue. Let's just be soft on crime. Let's allow criminals, repeat offenders, individuals who we know are likely to commit crime over and over again. Let's just let them out. No bail, no bond. Just release them back out onto the streets. Lo and behold, what happens? Crime continues to perpetuate. It is a completely unsustainable model for any city. And, you know, I mentioned it when I was chatting with Seth. You know, you look at what's going on in New York City right now with that mayoral election later on this year. You've got a literal socialist, a guy that is so soft on crime, it's unbelievable, in the lead candidate there, Zohran Mamdani. I mean, it's absurd. And I do believe that the tide is beginning to change. You know, we were talking earlier this morning about the voter registration changes. All of this stuff ties in together. All of this stuff has a major impact on the psyche of voters across the United States of America. It's beneficial for the Republicans. They need to take advantage of it, continue to show and stand up and work for middle-class Americans, continue to work for their voting base, and continue to provide the important information, policies, and data to them to keep them engaged and keep them voting. We appreciate Seth Woodall for his insight this morning. Appreciate him joining us here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, that's going to do it for a Thursday edition. Weather should increase across and get better throughout the day in the Outer Banks as Aaron is now officially moving away from the coast. If there are any lingering impacts, we'll have those details coming up for you tomorrow morning. Want to thank the Law Group for their continued support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. Thanks for joining us live this Thursday morning, YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook. If you're somebody that listens after the fact, thanks for joining us on the podcast as well. We're back here tomorrow morning for the Nick Craig Show.